It may be a past mood or notion that the ego has outgrown, or a forgotten fact, suddenly reasserting itself, unaccompanied by its proper surroundings, semicolon, or the connection of two incongruous ideas, and so on. There are countless such ideas, with which the ego has had to do in the past, and which he has not entirely thrown out of the mechanism of consciousness, so that they have lingered there, though the ego himself has outgrown them. So long as any part of the mechanism of consciousness can respond to them, for so long those ideas may emerge above the horizon, or threshold of consciousness. When such an idea comes up, as it does, without reason, without rationality, with the rush and surge and passionate strength of the past, it overbears the subtler mechanism that the ego has evolved for his higher purposes. For ideas, such as those we are considering, are stronger on the physical plane than those we call the ordinary mental ideas, because, their vibrations being slower and coarser, they produce more result in the denser matter. It is far easier to affect the physical body, for example, by the surge of a barbaric emotion, than by the subtle reasoning of a philosopher. We may state, then, that the fixed idea of the madman is usually an idea which has left its trace on the sympathetic system, and which, during some disturbance or weakening of the cerebrospinal system, is able to assert itself in consciousness. It arises from below. Page 222. The fixed idea of the saint or martyr, on the other hand, is a very different thing. This comes down from the ego himself, who is striving to impress upon the physical brain his own loftier emotion, his own wider knowledge. The ego, who can see further on the higher planes than he can in the physical encasement, tries to impress upon that physical encasement his own will, his own desire for the higher and nobler. It comes with all dominating power. It cannot approve itself to the reason, for the brain is not yet ready to reason on those lines of higher knowledge and of deeper vision and intuition, but it comes down, with the force of the ego, on a body prepared for it, and thus asserts itself as the dominant power, guiding the man to heroic action, to martyrdom, to saintship. Such fixed ideas come, not, as in the previous class, from below, but from above, not from the subconscious but from the superconscious. As was said in the mental body, p. 279, we need not shrink from the fact that there is frequently a psychological instability associated with genius, as expressed in the saying that genius is akin to madness, and in the statement of Lombroso and others that many of the saints were neuropaths. The more delicate the machinery, the more easily may it be overstrained, or thrown out of gear. Hence it is sometimes true that the very instability of the genius or the saint is the very condition of inspiration, the normal brain being not yet sufficiently developed, nor delicate enough, to answer to the subtle waves coming from the higher consciousness. Thus those impulses, which we call the promptings of genius, come down from the superconscious, page 147, from the realm of the ego himself. Not only do these inspirations from the higher consciousness sometimes cause brain instability, but, as is well known, they are frequently accompanied by great irregularity of moral conduct. The reason for this is interesting and important. When any force comes down, from a higher to a lower plane, page 223, it is subject to transmutation in the vehicle into which it comes. According to the nature of the vehicle will be the transmutation of the force. A portion of the force being changed by the vehicle, into which it plays, into the form of energy to which that vehicle lends itself most readily. Hence, for example, if an organism have a tendency to sexual excitement, the downflow of the force of genius will immensely increase the force of sexuality, by that part of which is transmitted into vitality. We may note here, as an example of the working of this principle, that in the third race, the downflow of the spiritual life, into the channels of the animal man, so enormously increased his animal powers, that it was necessary that the sons of mind should come to his assistance, or humanity would have plunged down into the vilest of animal excesses, the very force of the spiritual life increasing the depth of the plunge into degradation. The lesson to be learned here is clearly, that before we invite the inflow of the higher forces, it is all important first to purify the lower nature. As the Buddha taught, the first rule is, cease to do evil. In the words of the voice of the silence, beware lest thou shouldst set a foot still soiled upon the ladder's lowest rung. Woe unto him who dares pollute one rung with miry feet. The foul and viscous mud will dry, become tenacious, then glue his feet unto the spot, and like a bird caught in the wily fowler's lime, he will be stayed from further progress. His vices will take shape and drag him down. His sins will raise their voices like as the jackals laugh and sob after the sun goes down, his thoughts become an army, and bear him off a captive slave. Kill thy desires, Lanu, make thy vices impotent, ere the first step is taken on a solemn journey. Strangle thy sins, and make them dumb forever, before thou dost lift one foot to mount the ladder. Silence thy thoughts, and fix thy whole attention on thy master, whom yet thou dost not see, but whom thou feelest. Page 224, the student will scarcely need to be told that one meaning of thy master is his own ego. A man on the path must do his work thoroughly. On the threshold mistakes can easily be corrected. But unless the disciple gets rid entirely, for example, of the desire for power, in the early stages of his spiritual apprenticeship, it will become stronger and stronger. If he does not weed it out where it is based in the physical, astral and mental planes, but allows it to take root in the spiritual plane of the ego, he will find it very difficult to eradicate. Ambition thus established in the causal body is carried on from life to life. So the pupil should beware of permitting spiritual ambition to touch the causal body, and so build into it elements of separateness, which more and more encase the life. Page 148, a man who is a genius on some line may often find it easy to apply tremendous concentration to his particular line of work. But, when he relaxes from that, his ordinary life may quite possibly be still full of whirlpools in his mental and astral bodies. Such whirlpools may and do constantly crystallize into permanent prejudices, and make actual congestions of matter closely resembling warts upon the mental body. Vide the mental body, p.31. This of course is not what is required. The student of occultism aims at nothing less than the complete destruction of the whirlpools, so as to comb out the lower mind and make it the calm and obedient servant of the higher self at all times. During the sleep of the physical body, although the ego leaves the body, yet he always maintains a close connection with it, so that under ordinary circumstances, he would be quickly recalled to it by any attempt that might be made upon it, for example, to obsess it. Whilst there are several widely different causes of sleepwalking, vide the astral body p.1991, there are some instances in which it appears that the ego is able to act more directly upon his physical body during the absence of the intermediate mental and astral vehicles, page 225 instances in which the man is able, during his sleep, to write poetry or to paint pictures, which would be far beyond his powers when awake. The ego often impresses his ideas upon the personality in dreams, using sets of symbols, of which each ego has his own system, though some forms seem general in dreams. Thus it is said that to dream of water signifies trouble of some sort, although there does not seem any real connection between the two. But, even though there be no real connection, an ego, or for that matter some other entity who desires to communicate muse the symbol, merely because it is understood by the personality, and, by means of it, warn the personality of some impending misfortune. Prophetic dreams must be attributed exclusively to the action of the ego, who either foresees for himself, or is told of some future event, for which he wishes to prepare his lower consciousness. This may be of any degree of clearness and accuracy, according to the power of the ego to assimilate it himself, and having done so, to impress it upon his waking brain. Sometimes the event is one of serious moment, such as death or disaster, so that the motive of the ego, in endeavoring to impress it, is obvious. On other occasions, however, the fact foretold is apparently unimportant, so that it is difficult to understand why the ego should take any trouble about it. But in such cases, it must be borne in mind that the fact remembered may be merely a trifling detail of some far larger vision, the rest of which has not come through to the physical brain. Stories of such prophetic dreams are, of course, quite common. Several are to be found in dreams, by C.W. Leadbeater, p. 52 et sec. In order to bring through, into the physical brain, impressions from the ego, it is obvious that the brain must be calm. Everything from the causal body must pass through the mental and astral bodies, and, if either of these is disturbed, it reflects imperfectly, just as the least rippling of the surface of the lake will break up and distort images reflected in it. It is necessary, page 226, also to eradicate absolutely all prejudices, otherwise they will produce the effect of stained glass, coloring everything which is seen through them, and so giving a false impression. Page 149, if a man is to hear the still small voice with certainty and accuracy, he must be still, the outer man must be unshaken by all external things, by the clamor of the big breakers of life that dash against him, as well as by the delicate murmur of the softer ripples. He must learn to be very still, to have no desires and no aversions. Except on rare occasions, when it is unusually strong, it is only when personal desires and aversions have ceased to exist, when the voice of the outer world can no longer command him, that a man can hear the inner voice which should be his unfailing guide. Page 150, Chapter 28, The Ego and the Personality, Sacramental Aids, page 227. The sacraments of the Christian religion, and also the ceremonies of Freemasonry, have such an intimate bearing on the relationship between the ego and the personality, as to justify a separate chapter being devoted to considering this important aspect of our subject. We will consider first the sacraments of Christianity, as they are performed in the liberal Catholic Church. The Christian Church sets out to meet the soul or ego, as soon as he comes into his new set of bodies, offering him welcome and assistance. This is achieved through the ceremony of baptism. As it is not practicable to get at the ego himself, his vehicles are dealt with on the physical plane. As we have seen, what the ego most needs is to get his new set of vehicles in order, so that he can work through them. Coming, as he does, laden with the results of his past lives, he has within him seeds of good qualities, and also seeds of evil qualities. Those seeds of evil have often been called original sin, and quite wrongly connected with the fabled action of Adam and Eve. It is obviously of great importance to the child that everything possible should be done to starve out the germs of evil, and to encourage those of good. It is to this end that the sacrament of baptism is especially designed. The water used is magnetized, with a special view to the effect of its vibrations upon the higher vehicles, so that all the germs of good qualities, in the unformed astral and mental bodies of the child, may thereby receive a strong stimulus, while at the same time the germs of evil may be isolated and deadened. Page 228, the ceremony has also another aspect, that of consecrating and setting apart the new vehicles to the true expression of the soul within, and when it is properly and intelligently performed, there can be no doubt that its effect is a powerful one, which may affect the whole future life of the child. The baptismal ceremony brings a new force into activity, on the side of the ego, in order to influence his vehicles in the right direction. Underlying the belief that at baptism a guardian angel is given to the child, is the fact that a new thought form, or artificial elemental, is built, which is filled by the divine force, and also ensouled by a higher kind of nature spirit known as a self. This remains with the child as a factor on the side of good, so that to all intents and purposes it is a guardian angel. Incidentally, through this work the self becomes individualized, and grows from a self into a seraph, through its association with a thought form, permeated by the life and thought of the head of the church himself. The sacrament of baptism cannot alter the disposition of the man, but it can make his vehicles a little easier to manage. It does not suddenly make a devil into an angel, or a very evil man into a good one, but it certainly gives the man a better chance. This is what it is intended to do, and that is the limit of its power. Page 151. In addition, and more specifically, the baptismal ceremony is intended to open up the chakrams, or force centers, and to set them moving much more rapidly. When this has been done, for details the student is referred to the science of the sacraments, and the guardian angel thought form has been built. The pouring in of the triple spiritual force takes place at the actual baptism itself, through the medium of consecrated water. As the names of the Trinity are invoked, the force unquestionably flows from the three persons of the solar deity himself, though it reaches us through the intermediate stages of the Christ, who is the head of the Church, page 229, and the ordained priest. The thought which fills the guardian angel thought form is, in fact, really that of the Christ himself. Baptism is primarily intended for infants, and its commission in infancy cannot be fully supplied by baptism in later life. This adult has necessarily long ago verified the matter of his vehicles for himself, and his currents are flowing much in the same way as baptism would have caused them to flow, but it will usually be found that the corners are not cleaned up, much of the aura seems unvivified, and there is a large amount of indeterminate matter, with which nothing is being done. It has, therefore, a tendency to get out of the general circulation, to settle and form a deposit, and so gradually to clog the machinery and interfere with its efficient working. Baptism in infancy obviates much of this unpleasant result. In the case of older people, quite a different type of sylph is given, a more worldly wise entity, capable of development into a keener intelligence. About him there is something half cynical. He has unwearying patience, but he does not seem to be expecting much, while the angel of the baby is optimistic, vaguer, it may be, than the other, but full of love and hope, and schemes for the future. Still, a wholesome and beneficent influence is exercised by the baptism of adults. The anointing with the sacred chrism is not without its use, in cleansing the gateway through which the man passes in and out of his body in sleep, and even in the making of the shield, before and behind, is good, especially for those who are young and unmarried. In the sacrament of confirmation, the bishop pronounces a preliminary blessing, which is intended to widen out the connection between the ego and his vehicles, in order to prepare the way for what is coming. We might say that the object is to stretch both soul and vehicles to their utmost capacity, that they may be able to receive more of the divine outpouring. Page 230, as he makes the sign of the cross, at the appropriate places, the bishop pours into the candidate power, which is definitely that of the third person of the Trinity. This comes in three waves, and acts at the three levels, upon the principles of the candidate. The divine power rushes through the ego of the bishop, into the higher mind of the candidate, then it pushes upward into body and finally presses upwards into the Dhamma. In each case, it is through the third person aspect of each of these principles that the work is done. Page 152. Some candidates are, of course, far more susceptible to the process of opening up than others. Upon some the effect produced is enormous and lasting, in the case of others, it is often but slight, because as yet that which has to be awakened is so little developed as to be barely capable of any response. When the awakening, so far as it may be, has been achieved, there comes what may be called the filling and sealing of Dhamma, buddhi and manas. The effect on Dhamma is reflected in the etheric double, so far as the development allows, that on buddhi is reproduced in the astral body, and that on higher manas is mirrored in the mental body. The intention of confirmation is thus to tighten the links all the way up, to bring about a closer connection between the ego and the personality, and also between the ego and the monad. The result is not merely temporary, the opening up of the connections makes a wider channel, through which a constant flow can be kept going. Confirmation arms and equips a boy or girl for life, and makes it easier for the ego to act on and through his vehicles. Passing to the minor orders, we find the cleric is intended to aim at the control of his physical body, the doorkeeper to purify and control his astral body, the reader has to learn to wield the forces of his mind, the ordination of the exorcist is aimed at the causal body, and is intended to develop the will, and to give the ego fuller control of the lower vehicles. The degree of acolyte, page 231, is intended to help the man to quicken his intuition, the buddhic faculty. In this series of diagrams, the following symbols are employed: colon, page 153, page 232. In diagram 31 we have illustrated the condition of an intelligent and cultured layman. The true man, The monad is shown on his own plane, the Devanupadika. He expresses or manifests himself in his three aspects on the plane of Ma. These we will term Ma 1, Ma 2, and Ma 3, and have marked on the diagrams as A1, A2 and A3 respectively. Of these three aspects, the first, A1, remains in the plane of Ma. The second descends, or moves outwards, to the plane of Buddhi, where we will call it Buddhi 1, marking it B1. The third descends or moves out through the two planes, and shows itself in the higher mental world as Manas, or M. This aspect, also, as it descends or moves through the plane of Buddhi, we will call it Buddhi 2, or B2. These are three outer or lower manifestations, A1, B1 and M, taken together, constitute, as we know, the soul or ego, in his causal body, as indicated in the diagram by the dotted line, page 154, which encloses them. Thus we see that, in addition to the principles of Ma, Buddhi and Manas, expressed in the ego as A1, B1 and M, there is also, still latent and undeveloped, another aspect of Buddhi, B2, and two aspects of Ma, A1 and A2, making three further aspects still to be brought out of latency, and developed into activity. Now in the Christ himself, the perfect man, these principles also exist, in exactly the same order, but in his case, they are, of course, fully developed, and, moreover, mystically one with the second person of the Trinity. One of the gifts conferred by ordination is the linking of certain of these principles, in the Ordinand, page 233, with the corresponding principles of the Christ, so that a definite channel is made, down which spiritual strength and wisdom flow, up to the fullest limit of the Ordinand's receptivity. The ordination to the degree of subdeacon confers no powers, but assists in preparing the way for ordination to the degrees of deacon, the lowest of the three major orders. The bishop therefore attempts gently to widen their connection. The Antakarana, cp.190, between the ego and the lower vehicles of the subdeacon, see diagram 32a. At the ordination of a deacon, the link between the ego and his vehicles is widened, to become a channel, and also the higher manas, M, is linked with the corresponding principle of the Christ. In some cases Buddhi B1, may also be awakened, and made to glow slightly, thereby establishing a slight line of connection between it and the higher manas. These effects are indicated in diagram 32b. This opening of the channel is so great a departure from ordinary life that it can be done only by stages, and the first step towards it, in the ordination of a deacon, may be regarded as practically a psychic surgical operation. The threefold influence, of which a bishop is so especially the custodian as we shall see presently, is called strongly into manifestation, and poured forth, so that, by playing upon the corresponding principles of the ordinand, it stirs them into sympathetic vibration. They therefore become, at any rate for the time, enormously more active and receptive than ever before. At the conclusion of the ceremony of ordination the bishop makes a final cross, of which the express purpose is to thicken the walls of the much expanded link between the ego and the personality, to harden page 234, them, and hold them more firmly in their new form. It is as though a sort of framework were erected within, a lining to prevent the widened channel from contracting. Page 155. The establishment of the link between the deacon and the Christ enables the higher manas of the Christ to influence that of the deacon, and to stir it into beneficent activity. Needless to say, it does not all follow that it will so affect it, that depends on the deacon. At least the way is laid open, the communication is established, and it is for him to make of it what he can. In the case of the priest, the connection is carried a stage further, and several important developments take place. At the first imposition of the hands, Ma, and Buddhi in the priest, A1, B1 and M, are made to glow with indescribable fervor, by sympathetic vibration, in harmony with the blinding light of the corresponding principles in the Christ. The glow is usually slight in Ma, but more marked in Buddhi. The influx rushes into the ordinance Ma, Buddhi and Manas, through the corresponding principles of the bishop himself. Further, a line between Ma and Buddhi is established, while that already existing between Buddhi and higher manas is intensified. The channel between higher manas and the lower vehicles is also widened. See diagram 33c. At the second imposition of the hands, the hitherto latent principle of Buddhi, B2, is called into activity, and linked with that of the Christ, while the link between it and higher manas is strengthened. The link between the priest's own Ma, Buddhi and manas, A1, B1 and M, is opened still more, to permit the flow of more force, see diagram 33d. Thus the priest becomes, in a very real sense, an outpost of the consciousness of the Christ, so that he becomes his man, the person in fact, that word meaning the same as the person, cp.213, who represents the Christ in a certain parish. At the ordination of the priest, his ego is more, page 235, definitely awakened, so that he can act directly upon other egos at the level of the causal body. It is, in fact, this relation which gives him that power to straighten out the distortion caused by deviation from the path of right, which in ecclesiastical terminology, is known as the power to remit sin. The anointing of the hands of the priest, with oil of catechumens, which is constructive in its effects, is a setting of them apart for the purpose of his office and a molding of them for the transmission of the power of the Christ. The hand of the priest is thus a specialized instrument that can transmit a blessing. The anointing brings the opening forces to bear upon the hands, and endues them with power, whereby, along the lines that are made in the anointing, the influence can pour out. Page 156. The process is something like the magnetization of steel. The anointing operates so that forces can pass through the hands, and at the same time tempers the hands, so that they can bear the forces, and transmit the power safely. The bishop makes one cross, which is intended to arrange for the distribution of the force which rushes down the diagonal line between Ma 1, Buddhi 1, and manas, and a second cross which arranges for the dispensing of the force which flows from Buddhi 2. The development of an ideal priest is possible to a man of great determination, who for years works at strengthening the connections between his own principles and those of the Christ. He can intensify the link made with Buddhi 2, and manas, and can arouse to vigorous action Ma 1, and Buddhi 1, thereby making himself a channel of extraordinary power, Vidi diagrams Xxi. At the consecration of a bishop, when the actual, page 236, words of consecration are said, a connection is made between Buddhi, 2, and Ma, 3, and the channels between Buddhi, 2, and manas, and the corresponding principles of the Christ, are enormously widened, Vidi diagram, 34f. Thus through Ma, 3 Buddhi is linked directly with the triple spirit of the Christ, so that blessing from that level flows through him, for those three aspects are of course, truly one. Hence the rationale of the bishop signing the people with a triple cross, instead of with one, as the priest does. The priest draws his blessing down through his own principles, Ma 1, Buddhi 1, and manas, and emits through his causal body. The bishop, being more fully developed, is able to let the power shine through more immediately, and therefore far more strongly. In the case of the bishop, an entirely new line is also opened, linking the bishop's Buddhi 1, directly with that of the Christ, and thus giving it the potentiality of a development far beyond our imagination. It is this wonderful Christ force which enables him to hand on his powers to others. Next, the way is opened for the, page 157, influence of the amazing development of Buddhi, which has just been made possible, to pour down into the mental and astral vehicles. At the anointing of the head of the bishop with chrism, the power of reflection of the triple spirit in the lower vehicles is intensified. The triple spirit Ma 1, Ma 2, and Ma 3, glowing, and the way being cleared, down into the physical brain, for the flow of the new forces, see diagram 34g, the three lines connecting Ma 3, Buddhi 2, and manas, see diagram 34. Indicate that a bishop can draw, page 237, into the causal body, and thus ray forth in blessing, the threefold power of the triple spirit. The action of the chrism tends in the direction of making the force center at the top of the head Brahmarandra chakram, which in most men is a saucer-like depression, into a rapidly rotating cone, projecting upwards from the head.